Me Too movement has generated what some call the cancel culture. It's mostly has evolved on social media to punish anyone who falls out of favor with public opinion. Just this year, J.K. Rowling, author of the Harry Potter series, was canceled for transphobic comments made on Twitter. Jimmy Fallon was canceled when a video from 2000 surfaced of him doing an impression of Chris Rock in blackface. And Ellen DeGeneres was canceled after a whirlwind of criticism alleging that she has a cruel streak. Where did all this come from, and how did we get here? American Public Square at William Jewell's student program explored this earlier this year with a panel titled, I Got Canceled, What's Next? With us from that panel now is Corey Palmer. She's a graduate student from Worcester. We're still trying to get Corey. So also joining me this morning, Justice Horn. He was student body president at UMKC, and he was just canceled this summer. Justice, welcome back to Up to Date.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you. So, Justice, tell me about your cancellation this year. What was that all about?
So when we're jumping in this conversation, there were some false accusations set against me that basically said that I was an FBI informant during the Black Lives Matter protest. But other than that, I mean, we've moved past the fact, and a lot of the protesters have apologized as well.
Justice, tell me about what that felt like. You've been an activist. You've been on the right side of a lot of these protests. And then all of a sudden, you find yourself even temporarily on the wrong side. What was that like?
It shows that we have to look at not only the culture and the society we find ourselves today, that because of social media, things are moving so fast that allegations and even stuff like that can move so fast due to social media, where people can really believe some false accusations against a group, a company, or even association. I think it is not only because of where we find ourselves politically in America, but that things are so divided, so partisan, that we are looking to have the attitude of us versus them. How can we further be tribal? And I think that is not at all how a society or a country should be working. We should actively look at ways that we should work together and listen to each other. I think with cancel culture, it's very much the judge, the jury, and then very much the executor of one's career.
We have Corey Palmer now. She's a graduate student from Worcester College who wrote her graduate thesis on cancel culture. Corey, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, how are you?
I want to start with you about what we talked about here at the top of the segment. So how did we get here? How did we get to the cancel culture?
I think that cancel culture basically emerged from people not knowing any other way to especially referencing the Me Too movement, nobody really having a way to get anybody else's attention. And so when you can't get anybody else's attention, what do? You go to the most drastic measures, and that's where cancel culture was essentially birthed from. So I think that's how we got here.
Corey, Justice Horn just said that this is a genesis of the divided nature of our country right now. And in your research and in you talking to folks, is the cancel culture something that could have surfaced had we not been so divided? If we were living 20 years ago?
I think that, and I said this on the panel the other day, social media is simply an amplification of what's already there. So even if, we didn't have social media, cancel culture may have emerged in our own individual communities, and there just would have been no platform for us to unify and say, oh, this is something that I'm also doing in my neighborhood. So there's really no way to know, but I think that social media just gives us a tool to let others know, okay, this is what I'm doing in my community. Can you help me spread the message? So it might not have been as big of a deal, but I think it's definitely something that we would be encountering regardless.
So I want to hear from both of you on this. And Corey, I'm going to start with you. I want to hear your definitions of cancel culture and see if there's any difference between them. Corey, start with you. Give me your definition of the cancel culture.
Yeah, cancel culture is essentially a social media form of activism, if you would like to call it that, that is where a public decides that a celebrity figure or a member in their own community or a brand makes a decision that they don't really agree with because of the ethical reasons behind that decision. And so as a result, they remove their emotional and their financial support, which can result in the brand, person, celebrity figure suffering from that. So that's essentially what cancel culture is.
I want to come back to that notion of canceling a brand in a minute. But first, Justice, your thought on that. How do you define it?
Yeah, so I kind of a little lock in step with what Corey's saying. I think it is a form of activism through social media where if they're not believing that institutions are working, people are taking things into their own hands. I know that it was briefly touched on the panel a couple of nights ago that these conversations have always been in communities. And for example, the birthing of the Me Too movement and cancel culture happened because of the Me Too movement. We've seen a lot of people who have voiced their complaints of sexual assault in the workplace or at home or wherever they go, and they had to take it to the Me Too movement and in social media because there is strength in numbers, because people did not trust their institutions. And the same could be said about college campuses too. A lot of people have taken things into their own hands on social media because they may not trust the institutions or Title IX. And the same exact thing could be said about the Black Lives Matter movement, how there's a lot of consensus in community building and even on social media because a lot of people don't trust that the institutions of criminal justice and frankly, America is not working for people. I think cancel culture is good and bad, but it's very much fast and there's not a lot of trust in our institutions. So people are going to take things into their own hands. One thing we have to be well aware of and worried about is that there are no set guidelines or rules on how you cancel someone. So my judgment on what's cancelable to Corey's is very different because of our morals and our experiences and our upbringings. So it's a good thing, but it can also run rampant.
Corey, do you agree with that? I mean, it seems like to me the definition has to include running rampant. Or do you not agree with that?
Yeah, I do feel that cancel culture moves at a speed that we can't necessarily keep up with, mainly because we are just using our opinions and giving them to everybody else. And then what everybody else chooses to do with our opinions is not in our control anymore. Once you send a tweet or once you post something, it is out of your control. It actually doesn't even really belong to you anymore. It belongs to the platform that you put it on. So it does run rampant in a sense, but in the same way, as fast as cancel culture moves, something else is moving. So as fast as cancel culture is here, it will soon be gone and some other form of activism is going to come and take its place.
If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Steve from Kansas City, Missouri. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment about how this is recent.
Well, I don't know what happened to Steve, but if you want to join us again, 816-235-2888. Corey, I want to go back to you and talk about the canceling of brands. Talk to me about that, and what do you think is that we've seen the most prominent brand that has been canceled?
Yeah, I think it's been happening a lot lately. More so in the past years, brands that have been suffering from cancel culture are brands like H&M, Gucci, even Nike faced some blowback when they decided to support Colin Kaepernick. And a lot of their fans decided to take it to social media platforms and literally burn their product. Now, I don't think that is because you still spent the money on the product. So they're not really losing any money. but that is one example of cancel culture, basically removing your emotional support and placing it, replacing it, that is, with rage. But for H&M, they decided to come out with a post of a little black boy wearing a shirt with a monkey on it, in comparison to a young white boy who was wearing a shirt with a lion on it. And a lot of the emotional and historical background with black people in reference to being monkeys and less than human is the issue with brands just making these irrational decisions, whether they know what they're doing or they're not. But people are going to infer what they would like. So in that instance, people were like, this is offensive because it's a reference to when black people are described as being human, and that is not acceptable. Therefore, we will not be shopping at H&M anymore.
That's Corey Palmer. She's been studying cancel culture. Also with me, Justice Horn, former UMKC student body president. Both were on an American Public Square panel about cancel culture a couple of nights ago. Would this be any better if it was more deliberative? I don't know how we would do that, but you know, you both talked about just how fast it races. And I'm wondering, is there a way to slow it down and actually have a productive, rational discussion about this? Justice, I want to hear that. I want to hear from you first.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think when we, again, I think things move so fast is because it very much is, it's a thrill for a lot of people. It's very much a mob mentality where we hear one thing, and even it may be our peers, our friends that believe one thing, and you want to jump in and automatically believe in one thing. I think how we slow this down and have some form of control on cancel culture in 2020 is first looking at the information, taking a step back and actively researching a subject, not just kind of retweeting and putting your two cents in the moment. I think that's how things really have a snowball effect, and having empathy for your common man or woman in society, not automatically believing everything you see on the internet. I also know that because it was birthed out of the Me Too movement, we must, in the same sense, believe victims and hear them when they do come forward. But something as far as this past summer where I was canceled for a misstated rumor that I was leading the Black Lives Matter movement and giving all secrets to the FBI was absolutely wild. If you would have taken a step back and seen my history and my background, I think that it wouldn't have moved so fast, but it's something of a thrill to really believe some conspiracy like that. So I think in the same sense, it's empowering to people, but we must realize that you can't believe everything you hear in 2020.
Corey, what about you? Do you think there's a way that we can slow this down? I mean, the idea that you're going to slow down a mob to a deliberative pace and have them study seems almost impossible to me. Do you think it is?
I think America is very rooted in individualism. And that's important to think about when we consider cancel culture, because it starts as an individual movement, and then once you release it on social media, it becomes sort of quote unquote mob-like mentality. And we have to remember that social media is simply a tool. There are other tools into which we can communicate and meet with others. So I think if we're trying to consider ways in which we should slow cancel culture down, I think it does go off of what Justice says, like looking into the articles and looking into what is fake news and educating yourself before you make irrational decisions. Now, we can't really apply this when it comes to our personal experiences, especially in now I'm referencing like sexual assault and things like that. I can't really tell one person if they choose to come out about their sexual assault experience that it's not valid or it's not true and they shouldn't post it on social media, because by all means, you definitely should do that. But when it does come to these brands or celebrities, you should be researching that first. And also, I think holding like more community like forums to discuss what we are going to do about these subjects who we choose to cancel would be much more beneficial than just off-right, you know, possibly bashing them on social media for their actions.
On Twitter from Thomas, we got a comment, J.K. Rowling, her position, he tweets, against trans people makes her literature hard to enjoy. And I want to hear from both of you now whether or not we can, separate the artist from whatever transgression they might have had. Corey, I want to start with you.
Yeah, I don't believe that you can separate the art from the artist because as an artist myself, so I've been writing poetry for a very long time. My art is a reflection of me as the artist. That means my opinions, my ideas are all going into the art that I produce. There's no way that you can separate me from my ideas. It's just simply not possible. Now, if you choose to still support these people after they come out with their opinions and XYZ, that's up to you because of your emotional connection. But you do have to recognize that when they were creating this art, they still had these, it's still possible that they possibly had these opinions, especially when like J.K. Rowling is coming out with these opinions after such a long time. That means that like when she was writing these Harry Potter books such a long time ago, she probably still had the same idea about trans folks.
Mm-hmm. Justice, your thought about that?
Yeah, again, Corey hits it on the nail. I think when we talk about, let's say, for example, the J.K. Rowling story, not only did she's an acclaimed artist for the Harry Potter series and franchise, but when her views on transgender individuals came out, it was very clear that a lot of people pressed her for that, and she had many times to maybe walk that back, but she kept doubling down and kept bashing the trans community. And I think that's when a lot of us in society saw that and gave her the opportunity to not only explain herself, but maybe walk those back, but she doubled down. So it was very clear after some time, that's her view on transgender individuals. And that's why I don't support her anymore. I know a lot of people in society don't support her anymore because you have no place in society if you're transphobic at all. I really believe that. We, especially coming up in this new generation, believe that everyone has the rights. Everyone has the basic decency to be treated fairly, and to have any phobia, any misogynistic, racist, homophobic nature, we will not support your work. We will not support your art, and we will make sure that you have no career moving forward.
816-235-2888 if you want to join Justice Horn and Corey Palmer on our cancel culture discussion this morning. Corey, you're doing your research on cancel culture. There hasn't been a lot of it, so tell me how you're going about it and sort of what your top line thoughts are, what you've discovered so far.
Yeah, so essentially, because there's not a lot of research, well, there actually is. There's a lot of research that's not considered quote unquote scholarly. So by this, I'm talking about newspaper articles. I'm talking about profound philosophers who have probably given their two cents about it, but they just haven't gone through the method of having it published by any like scholarly publications. But the way that I went about my research was actually taking it to the people and interviewing minorities within my college community about how they felt about cancel culture. Because the people that we need to be talking about cancel culture with are the people who are on social media. Now, this is very expansive, but I'm specifically talking about the current generation. So generation Gen Z, Gen Y, like these are the people who are really using social media to the best of their ability to make their voices heard. So I was mainly talking to them about how they feel about cancel culture, how they feel about ideas such as art versus the artist and emotional support when it comes to, you know, canceling people. And a lot of people have found that, well, I found that. I found that it is much easier for brands to be forgiven than people, because brands don't have a face. Now, of course, if you're talking about Apple, you know, Steve Jobs is the face of Apple, but he's no longer with us. Like, Apple doesn't really have a face. Like, if Apple were to do something offensive, it would be much easier to uncancel them, because you're thinking, oh, it's simply a group of people who made this board decision and they just simply did it for money. But when a celebrity comes out with their own personal opinion that seems to be homophobic, transphobic, racist, sexist, XYZ of all of these isms, it feels a lot more personal because you have emotional connections to this person's art. A good example would be Kanye West when he decided to come out as a Trump supporter. And a lot of his listeners don't support that simply because he seemed to be making irrational comments such as slavery being a choice and things of that nature. So it's going to be harder for me to emotionally support you when I think that you don't even care about my opinions as a listener.
Dan from Leawood, you're on with us.
When artists have, you know, messages that spread hate and are anti-diverse and anti-inclusive, I think that there's nothing worse than that. But sometimes I think cancel culture moves so quickly that some, you know, I think there's a difference between somebody who doesn't understand diversity and inclusion and has some ignorance versus someone who is actively you know, going out and propagating misogyny or hate and those types of messages. And I think one of the issues I take with cancel culture is that it's such the judge, jury, and verdict, and judge, jury, and executioner, and it does it so quickly that that the people who have said some things and have done some really stupid and ill-timed things don't get a chance to really learn from their mistakes, and don't get a chance to really embrace diversity. And sometimes I worry that by canceling, we're adding more fuel to the fire that divides us, and at the same time, throwing another person out that could maybe, if educated properly, could be an ally. That's my comment right there.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for that. I want to get Justice's take on that. Justice, what do you think about that? Can we give people a little rhythm, a little space to get better?
Yeah, so that is my number one problem with cancel culture. We need to understand that there are a lot of people who come from different backgrounds, different experiences, and that have different ideologies. I think with cancel culture and the rate it moves, it's very much slamming the door in the face of a lot of people who could be allies, who could learn. We need to understand that all of us, no matter our age, have an opportunity to change and learn. And I think at the rate cancel culture is moving, that there's no opportunity for that. That's, again, why I think we need to have empathy for one another and really hear one another. Although someone may say some ignorant or stupid thing, I mean, we have to understand and hear them and even educate on ourselves. Maybe why is this person feeling this? Maybe why do they have those views or ideologies? And work with them to actively see how we can educate one another. I think it's a missed opportunity when we shut people down, and that, again, further tribalizes American society and pushes us in our corner. And I know that this even happened during the Black Lives Matter movement here in Kansas City, that people were canceling people and organizations because they weren't putting out statements and or not moving fast enough. But we have to understand that people are going to come to the Black Lives Matter with different outcomes. They could be marching on the street, could be simply posting, could be donating, but everyone's going to come to a movement at a different place. I think that when we shame people into getting involved with the movement, it creates acting. But when we educate and inspire them, those are real allies. Those are people we can count on.
Corey, I want to give you the last word here before we have to wrap up this segment.
Yeah, I think that at this day and age, because we all, well, not all of us, Of course, there is a group of people who don't really have access to social media, but the people who do have access to social media and can get on there with their opinions, whether they're tweeting out of ignorance or out of hate, there is room for you to learn. And so if you are talking out of ignorance and somebody calls you out about it, you have to then take a step back and recognize you might possibly be wrong. And I know that we as humans hate being wrong. But in the same way that you found your ignorant opinion, it can also be unlearned. And for it to be unlearned, you have to recognize that there are resources out there, way more resources about being positive than there are about being ignorant. And so it's simply asking the person who called you out, hey, would you be willing to hold space for me and talk to me about this? Tell me exactly why I'm wrong. You know, and it's about that. It's not about popping off back at them like, oh, well, this is my opinion. And it's just, you know, we have to have more dialogue. We have to make more space for that. And that's about all that I can say on that one.
You know what? You said a lot. Corey Palmer, Justice Horn, thank you both for joining us this morning. Great to have you. For the full conversation, I Got Canceled, What's Next? You can visit AmericanPublicSquare.org, where you can also find upcoming panel discussions and future events.